Well, Tom, in the aftermath of our election in this country, is there any silver lining that Christians can grab a hold of after the election?
Huge, huge silver lining. In fact, it's this whole cloud. Although the political part of our spectrum lurched left last night, the values, traditional moral values, won big. All three of the state marriage amendments passed. California, with Hollywood, with San Francisco, through all of those values and all of that money against the notion that marriage is one man and one woman. And on the other side was the local church, led by pastors around the state who encourage people to understand the value of marriage. And our side, with the grace of God, was able to prevail. Now, not only did we prevail in the vote count, but we nearly matched Hollywood and all its millions of dollars, dollar for dollar. The other side spent about $37 million, $38 million. Our side spent about $35 million. We have not seen that kind of equity in spending on marriage amendments ever before. So God's people rose to the challenge last night in California. And in Arizona, that one passed easily. In Florida, I thought Florida was going to lose. I thought it was too high a bar. In Florida, 60% is necessary to pass an amendment on the ballot now, not only 50%. And once again, it was grassroots people led by pastors, informed by good policy people. And that coalition grew slowly over the years. That petition process in Florida lasted for 4 years, and they brought it over that high bar of 60%. I think it wound up with 62%. So those are tremendous points of light in an otherwise dark evening.
Tom, both candidates have claimed to express faith in Jesus Christ, but how hostile or friendly do you anticipate the Obama administration to be toward family values and the Christian church?
I think the Obama administration will be very hostile the family values, as well as the Christian church. We will undoubtedly see the passage in the Congress of something called the hate crimes law, which would make it a federal crime to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. What does that mean? Well, we don't know what it means until it finally makes its way through the courts. There'll be a lot of court battles, and we don't know the precise language of the bill yet, because the bill hasn't been introduced in the new Congress, which will seat itself in January. But here's what I think will be in that bill. It will be obviously a federal crime if some unfortunate person commits a violent act against someone who he thinks might be gay or is homosexual, and nobody wants that, of course. But if that person who did that crime happened to be in a church before he committed that crime, then the federal investigators might well want to examine the content of the pastor's sermons to determine what the motive for the crime was, and did the motive have anything to do with a church sermon that might have been preached on Romans chapter 1. Regarding the Christian church, there will be another bill that will soon come to pass called the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and nobody wants to discriminate against anybody in the matter of employment, but think it through for a second. What about churches? Churches need to discriminate on the basis of faith and values when they hire a pastor. Well, okay, the federal law might allow you to do that, but what about the church organist? Does that church organist have to have the same faith beliefs as the pastor, and why is that important? What about the custodial staff? Does everybody on the custodial staff have to believe in the things that the church teaches? And maybe not. And so there'll be a lot of lawsuits over those things with the passage of the Employee Non-Discrimination Act. And we have seen that discrimination policy pretty much shut down the faith-based initiatives that President Bush tried to establish, because the Salvation Army wants to hire people who believe in the precepts of the Salvation Army when it opens a new soup line, but unable to do so if this new law passes. So that's what's at stake for the Christian church and family values in the new administration.
And Tom, obviously there's a lot of excitement, good and bad, depending on which side you're on over this election. How soon do you expect to see some of those changes that you just mentioned?
I expect them very soon. I believe both the hate crimes bill and the And the bill, Employment Non-Discrimination Act, will be introduced very quickly. And also the president will probably end the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy regarding the military, so there will be open homosexuality in the military. And I'm not, this is not gloom and doom. This is just based on what the man has said.
Okay, so one of the big concerns for every one of our listeners is on the issues of human life and the right to life, the pro-life movement. It's a key issue concerning abortion. How do you project the outcome of this election? How will that affect the pro-life movement?
Well, it'll have deep impact on the pro-life movement because the president, the elect, if he makes good on his promise, will encourage the passage of something called the Freedom of Choice Act, which would knock down all abortion-limiting regulations at the state level. What's preventing passage of pro-life laws at the local level now is the reality that once those laws get into court and they get fought over legally and get to the Supreme Court, they will be turned back because there is not a majority on the U.S. Supreme Court that will overturn anything that limits a woman's right to choose abortion, although certain kinds of abortions the court has said are okay to be limited. For example, partial birth abortion finally was passed, a ban against partial birth abortion finally was passed in the Congress and upheld by the Supreme Court. And that was the first time the Supreme Court limited any kind of abortion since 1973 when the Roe v. Wade decision came down. However, the new Supreme Court justices that will be appointed by President Obama undoubtedly will be very left-leaning, very pro-abortion, very anti-life.
Tom, I want you to respond to a statement that I read. I was kind of fishing through the political blogs last night after it was announced that Obama had won the election. And I read on one of the blogs the person saying, well, I'm glad he won, though he said, I don't believe in abortion, but I don't think we can legislate righteousness. Now, that is often a line that a lot of people say and use. Would you comment on that?
Yeah, usually it's said, you cannot legislate morality. Well, my goodness, morality is legislated in just about every law we have. For example, thou shalt not steal is a moral statement. We find it in the Ten Commandments, and it makes a pretty good law.
Yep.
Just because it's morality, does that mean we got to erase that law from the books? Thou shalt not commit murder is a religious precept, but it makes a pretty good law. And just because it's a moral statement coming from the Bible, does that mean it doesn't make a very good law? Of course not. People who say that are people who have not given this very much thought at all.
In fact, it almost sounds like they're saying it's okay to legislate immorality, but not morality.
Well, that's right, and that's the other side of the question. They are pushing hard to pass laws that increase morality. A lot of the gambling issues that have been on the ballot in recent years have passed, which appeal to people's baser instincts. Obviously, the laws that allow pornography to be distributed, those are immoral laws. And so you're right. Immorality seems to be outpacing morality in the legislative races these days.
Well, one of the big issues out in California, our listeners know, is Proposition 8. But not everybody understands what that is and what the background of that is and what the goal of that issue is. Would you explain that and frame that for us?
Well, I'd be glad to do that. In the year 2000, the people of California, by a wide margin, passed a ballot amendment simply saying that marriage is between one man and one woman. And it was not an amendment to the Constitution, but just a statute, that is to say, it's a law. And that law was taken to court, and last spring the Supreme Court of California overturned it and said it was unconstitutional because it discriminates against same-sex couples. Now, even though the people of California stated overwhelmingly that this is what they want, the Supreme Court, by one vote, 4-3, overturned that state law. And then same-sex marriage was legal in California. So the people went back to the streets, and they collected signatures and put another amendment on, another issue on the ballot. This time it was an amendment, a constitutional amendment, saying that marriage is between one man and one woman to undo what the courts had done in spite of the clear will of the people. And Proposition 8 was on the ballot yesterday in California, and it won, as you know. So once again, the people have prevailed. Now they have written that God's definition of marriage into the very constitution of the state of California, and it's going to be very difficult for those judges to find the constitution unconstitutional.
I want to just shift to the ACLU. I'm sure you have story after story about the campaign that they've been on to suppress religious expression, especially Christian expression. Could you just go through a few areas of attack and give us your perspective on what we can expect to see on the horizon?
Well, if the courts shift, and the courts will shift leftward because of the court appointments by the Obama administration, and the ACLU will find that a lot of the causes that it supports will be gaining ground. Until now, however, we have been gaining back some ground. For example, that large cross in the public park in San Diego was sued by the ACLU because they didn't think there should be a Christian symbol like a huge cross in a public park anywhere. That's been a long court battle, and our side won on that. Thank the Lord, that cross now is protected. But when new judges come to federal courts after an Obama administration takes hold, that will be back in court probably. We have been winning on other grounds, the right to use public facilities by Christian organizations. It had been in the 90s that Christian organizations were routinely rejected from using public library facilities. And in New York, they've been terribly strong about keeping Christian churches out of public school buildings on Sunday morning. Land is so expensive in Manhattan, it's hard to for a new church to find a place to build, so they rent school facilities, but they've not been able to do that. We've gained ground. We've taken that ground back, and now churches are allowed in the state of New York to use public school facilities thanks to some lawsuits by our friends at the Alliance Defense Fund. And that probably will find its way back into court on favorable turf when the ACLU begins to find more left-leaning judges appointed. So the battles that we have been gaining ground on are going to be challenged again, I'm afraid.
Which means we're going to have to fight harder, I'm sure.
We are. And we're going to have to fight smart, and we're going to have to not despair. I was saying before that we grieve over the results for the country, and we're proud of the fact that an African-American man has been elected president. We wish it had been a different African-American man, because someone whose policies are those held by Barack Obama are those that are left liberal, despite all the rhetoric of the campaign. Mm-hmm. But I think that we're going to be seeing a pendulum swing. The pendulum swung way out to the left yesterday, and what's most likely to happen is that it's going to swing back to the right when the policies of the Obama administration become clear and when all the fuzzy rhetoric of the campaign disappears.
And Tom, do you think that this new administration is going to, which side are they going to take when it comes to Christians expressing their faith in the workplace?
Well, that probably will be hurt because of the outworking of the Employee Non-Discrimination Act and the hate crimes law. If someone has a Bible on his or her desk at work, someone else might say, that's a book that says homosexuals are going to hell. I'm a homosexual, and I think that's a hateful book. And if that person takes it to his human relations department, probably the Bible on the desk will have to disappear. So that's a problem. And I think we're going to have to enter an era in which Christians make friends with people at work. And someone who sees a Bible on a desk will not see it as a formidable weapon to be used against them, but merely something that's on the desk of a friend. And the New Testament gives us wonderful weapons, if you will, of love. The fruits of the Spirit, the second greatest commandment, the golden rule are wonderful, wonderful passages that help us gain ground with other human beings and draw them toward us. And this is a time when those passages ought to be reflected upon. Also, the 12th chapter of the book of Romans, starting about verse 10 all the way through the end of that. That those passages reflect an entire, what I call an attitude of gratitude, about how we should live our lives in gratitude for the grace that Jesus has shown to us.
Wow.
So these things will be very significant.
I love your emphasis on weapons of love, Tom. And I know that Focus has been talking about these issues for a long time and has been on the forefront of helping us understand what they are. Are there any Christian lawyers that are fighting some of these trends that we've been talking about?
Oh, yes. I mentioned an organization called the Alliance Defense Fund, which was founded in the early 90s by evangelical leaders such as Bill Bright, D. James Kennedy, Dr. Dobson, Don Wildman, Marlon Maddox, to try to raise up an actual legal law firm to stand against this ground we were losing and to begin showing up in court. And I'm just humbled to say that that organization, which Focus on the Family remains very close to, I'm on the board of the organization now, has grown to become a $30 million a year organization with nearly 30 staff lawyers and nearly 1,000 trained attorneys in locales around the country who file lawsuits on behalf of the cause of religious liberty and the rights of the unborn and free expression of religious concepts. And because these smart attorneys have been filing good cases, we have been taking back some of the ground, but you have to, you can only do so much when the judge who's against you believes in a left liberal view of the law. So it's going to be a struggle, but yes, indeed, Christian attorneys have been showing up in court.
Well, I want to talk about something that our listeners may or may not be aware of called the Fairness Doctrine, which runs its tentacles all the way into the radio media ministry. It's tantamount to the suppression of free speech. Could you tell us what that is, the Fairness Doctrine, and how serious is this threat?
The Fairness Doctrine is an outmoded concept that says because the airwaves are the public's, and because the stations, particularly radio stations, are limited, anybody who gets on and discusses political issues ought to be sure that all sides are represented. And that was an entirely unworkable scheme, because who's to say which sides of which issues are represented adequately? And what happened was a lot of radio station owners just got out of the political issue business altogether. And so what was supposed to be a good thing turned out to be a bad thing. Well, in the era of President Reagan, he ended that Fairness Doctrine. It was a doctrine of the Federal Communications Commission. He ended it. And everybody was free to say what they wanted, to start whatever radio stations, whatever programs they wanted, and may a thousand opinions bloom. And that he did that in the mid-80s. Shortly after that, we had a guy named Rush Limbaugh begin a radio program and offering his very conservative views very forcibly, and his audience grew. And so a lot of other radio talk show hosts have bloomed since then, and liberals have tried talk radio, but they've not been able to find an audience. There are plenty of liberals willing to say liberal things in the studio, but not a whole lot of people, for some reason, willing to listen to it as part of a radio audience. And so the Fairness Doctrine is now being openly discussed by Democrats in Congress as something that ought to be reimposed because, frankly, they don't like getting beat up by conservative talk show hosts every day. And that will be a severe imposition on free speech if, indeed, that is reimposed.
Wow. I want to ask about the new president and his policies, because when we elect a new president, we're not just electing a man, we're electing a whole group of policymakers that he's going to bring alongside of him, including his ability to appoint judges. So let's start with the Supreme Court. What is the outlook for new members and the cases that they'll be presented with?
Well, I'm not the expert on that. I just would know generally that attorneys who have come out of the ACLU are likely to be appointed as judges on the federal courts, including the Supreme Court. And the reason I say that is one of them already is on the Supreme Court. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a former attorney connected with the ACLU. lawyers like that will become judges, and those judges will make it to the court. And a lot of the issues that we've been talking about will become lawsuits and will be making their way to the court, and it will be a dead end for family values. So we're girding for action and asking all people to continue to pray and be alert and be active citizens.
Well, Tom, thanks for being our guest on The Connection.
It was an honor to be on your program.
God bless you.